is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Friday, September 15th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for the day as we continue a conversation with Karanjaya Sloganov. Now, mind you, I'm going to repronounce that later on because, you know, I always have an issue pronouncing the name. But as part of our conversation today, anyone who can actually pronounce Karanjaya Sloganov properly, get a prize. We continue to do that, right? And this is a continued conversation, but I'm reminded of a scripture verse, Romans 12 and 21, that says, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." And this is one of those stories, overcoming evil by just doing good, overcoming the odds. And Karanjaya has a story, he's continuing that story of him overcoming the odds and being an example for Bahamian youth, being a youth ambassador for the Bahamas, being a person who was awarded to the state to be adopted, right? For overcoming abuse from his early childhood to moving to private schools, some of the best private schools in the world, and going all the way to which country that was, Logan? Make sure his mic is on for me.
Scotland being the head boy, and now I'm in Switzerland studying hospitality management.
And that's where we're going to continue our story. And those who want to know about the previous story, let me give you the right date for that right now. Looking for Karanjaya. Give me a couple seconds and I'll tell you where to find that. That was message. Guardian Radio, June 22nd, 2023. Wow, and you can actually listen. Say again?
I said, wow, it's been that long.
Yeah, from June. Yes, I've been trying to get him back on to continue the story. But if you want to listen to the prior story, go to June 22nd, Guardian Radio AM program. Okay? So I want you to reintroduce yourself. Uh-huh. And then we can quickly go on to that narrative, because I want to start off on how you get to military school and mm-hmm. your time there. Mm-hmm. And I also recently... Mm-hmm. You had an interaction with the police.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I want to perhaps start off with that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So reintroduce yourself, mm-hmm. and we'll go to that police story and what you were doing here in mm-hmm. the Bahamas whilst you're here and okay. not in Sweden.
Okay. Yes. So it's a pleasure to be back onto the show. It's Karanjaya Sloganov, 20 years old. And the story can begin from there.
Yes. So let's talk about the police. Mm-hmm. You had a interaction with the police yes. recently. When yes. I say recently, well, how long is it? 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Yeah, actually, just last week.
Okay.
Just last week.
Tell me about that story so we go on.
So, no, I actually, oftentimes, we tend to find ourselves complaining, always bashing the Royal Bahamas Police Force and the dedicated officers, men and women, that serve our country. But I actually want to turn that narrative and actually congratulate and thank a few officers who would have assisted me. A few weeks ago or so, I was ganged by a few boys unknown to me at a party, and I didn't know what to do. I was a bit scared. I was terrified. Actually, I thought they were going to kill me, but I ran instantly to speak with a police officer. And these police officers were so professional. They guided me. They advised me consistently on what the outcomes were, what the results were, what they were about to do. So they kept me abreast of everything. And I am very happy to say, about last week or so in the evening, they were able to apprehend all three suspects who were involved in the attack. And now, you know, I just want to say the job that they did to in pursuing this case to ensure that, you know, I was okay, checking in on me. Even the Commissioner of Police was involved and making sure that I was okay. And I just want to really share that story because I just saw recently about a police officer who was being questioned, or, you know, we always complain about what the officers do. We never see the positive that they do. And so I just wanted to highlight that case at the very beginning because I am very, very happy to say that all is well. The case is being handled and, you know, the outcome is going to be great. For the young men who attacked me, they're not going to really go to jail or anything like this. It's going to be just, you know, keep the peace for a few months or half a year. And or whatever. But the officers, they were so professional, they were kind, they were respectful, they understood the situation, and they assisted me. So I just really wanted to say, you know, kudos to those officers, because actually they were looking for these boys for quite a while. They couldn't find them, and they were searching, and they were relentless in finding these boys, and they were found. And so, you know, I think that's a very good story to start off with. Congratulating the police on a marvelous job. Well done.
And I appreciate that story. Because yes. There are times we'd be remiss of congratulating our police force.
Yes.
And like you said, we tend to complain a lot.
Often without a solution.
Mm-hmm. So it's good to hear a positive story of police doing their job, being professional, and taking on a role where they can comfort you and guide you into a solution. So I want to say thank you to the Royal Bahamas Police Force and, of course, the commissioner who got involved.
Indeed.
Also.
Indeed.
But I want to give a narrative of you. Mm-hmm. You were a youth ambassador where?
Youth ambassador, actually right here.
Yeah, explain that. I just want to preempt everybody. Yep.
So one of the positions I was given was the most distinguished youth ambassador for the Kingdon National Parkinson's Foundation. And it's a nonprofit organization which, of course, helps those living with Parkinson's disease in the Bahamas, which is quite a lot. It's quite a few individuals living with this disease, debilitating disease. And one of the things I do is I am the youth voice representing the foundation. Also, I would have served as youth parliamentarian in 2019 and also in 2020 back-to-back as the youth parliamentarian for Anglestone. So we, you know, every year, actually, October is Youth Month. It's coming up right around the corner, and it's going to be a line of events. One of the things that the Ministry of Youth, Sports and Culture, but in specific, the Youth Division, one of the initiatives that they do, they have the National Youth Awards, which is, a well-anticipated event. But then they also have the Youth in Parliament program, where young men and women like me, myself, who would they would see the potential in us. We send out our application. They train us and everything, and then they come and say, you got a position, you're going to represent this constituency. They give you a topic, just like the regular parliamentarians would do, like the Prime Minister, etc. They give us a debate topic, and then we have to discuss it. We have a morning session and an afternoon session. And also, we have the youth in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And so this is how my role as a youth ambassador would have started, and to what I am doing now, you know, just being a youth voice representing men and women, young men and women like myself, speaking on their behalf.
You also do something in tourism?
Pardon?
You also were a youth ambassador in tourism of some sort?
No. I wasn't in tourism, but I do travel quite a lot. And during my travels, I would also speak on about the Bahamas around with my travels. But I've not been associated with the Ministry of Tourism. I've only been associated with the Ministry of Youth, Sports and Culture.
So you're back home and you're leaving when again?
October the 11th.
While you were here in New Providence, back in the Bahamas.
Yes.
What were you doing?
Well, I came back to the Bahamas because, like I told you, I attended school in Scotland, and when I went to Switzerland, I'm studying hospitality management and business administration. And one of the segments of the seven semester program, which is 3.5 years altogether, is that we have to do an internship. And I had a 6-month internship period, which is one full semester. And I came back to give back to my country based on the knowledge and understanding and the information and the training and the skills that I would have already been given from my first semester. So in order to succeed and graduate from university, I would have to complete 2 internship semesters. The first one I would have completed this summer at, you know, Bahama SLS, and I had an amazing time thanks to people like Julie Duncanson, Deontay, LaToya. I had some amazing people working with me, and through it all, I still can't believe I left, you know, Bahama, but time comes like that. Time comes and it goes.
So you're returning back to Switzerland.
Yes.
And which university or which school that you're attending there?
Yes, I'm attending the prestigious noble institution of Gleon Institute of Higher Education. And that is in Switzerland. We have 2 campuses in Switzerland, one in Freiburg-Buhl. We have one in Montreux. And then we also have one in London.
Okay. And for the listening audience who weren't tuned in for our last show in June, mm-hmm. right? I need I was going to say 5 minutes. But give a 3-minute synopsis of how you got this opportunity mm-hmm. To get to Switzerland, mm-hmm. Scotland first, then mm-hmm. Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And basically your life story in mm-hmm. 5 minutes.
Okay, yes, I could do that. Well, it's all thanks, first of all, to the Almighty God. And then a huge thanks, I cannot thank him enough, my adopted father, Beat Martin Schlagenhoff. So much so that when I got adopted and I took the name, I actually changed some of my name. My first name was Karajaya Yaquarius Ihab Forbes, and I changed it when I got adopted to Karajaya Yaquarius Martin Schlagenhoff, taking the middle name of my adopted father and his last name. So it all happened because of him, I would say, in the grace of God. My mother died.
I just want to make sure that everyone understands that you were Forbes first.
Yes, Forbes, and then adopted into the Schlagenhoff family. But my mother died when I was 11. I was a ward of the state living in the Nazareth Center Children's Home in grade 6. We had just seen my mother that Christmas of 2013. She died on a birthday in 2014, February 7th, such a sad day. But moving away from that, after she would have died, my biological father would have come into connection with my now adopted father, and he told him a story about us. I don't know, but anyhow, it made my adopted father very sad. It touched him, and he said he wanted to invest in our education because he believes, and he continues to believe, that education is the passport to the future and to anything if you want to succeed, because any people could take away anything from you. They cannot take your education away. And so he would have adopted us. During the process, he said, you need to leave the Bahamas and get, you know, broaden your horizon. So he sent us to military school in Canada, where I would have stayed for quite a long time. Then we left the military school in Canada. I came back to the Bahamas. And after 1 or 2 years in the Bahamas, I went to Scotland, became the first black-haired boy. And now I am living in Switzerland, where my adopted father is originally from. So I'm studying hospitality management there.
And I appreciate that. But I just want people to appreciate your narrative. Mm-hmm. And now we start our interview.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Military school in Canada.
Yes.
Right? I remember the last time we had a conversation, you said you didn't really like that.
No.
And I want the Bahamian listening audience, to appreciate what did you go through mm-hmm. in military school in Canada.
Yes, you know, it is an all-boys military school. Military theme school, Robert Land Academy in Welland-Port, Ontario. My brother selected this school unbeknownst to me. I had no knowledge of, you know, what school we were going to, were supposed to be going to, but I was.
And I just want to ask, this is your brother who was adopted with
who's
you?
Also adopted, yes, the one before me, Kamanra, yes. And so he thought it would have been the best idea to go to a military themed school for reasons I still don't know. But we went there. 6 days after my birthday, we would have traveled to Canada. And it's, you know, before now, we didn't know what the school was actually made for. It was more focused on kids who has trouble waking up and going to school, who has disciplinary issues, mm-hmm. discipline issues. They don't know, they don't behave, they don't respect authority, which would be their mother, their father, you know, family members, adults. And so it was more of a school to like break you So to send you back into the world rejuvenated and reborn again, I think. I don't know if that's the word I should use. I'm tempted to say that. But we didn't know that at first. So we left 1 year after my mother would have died. And we went into this school. They started shouting at us and everything because what they would, the ideology I think they have is they would break you down and build you up again. Mm-hmm. So they had to break you down. And when I went there, I remember saying goodbye to my adopted father. He went, as soon as I waved my hand at the taxi and he was going back to the hotel, because you have to sign over all of your rights as a parent to the school when you are there. So the school makes all of the decisions based on you, to the point where once I was suspended based on something that I would have done, and suspended so much where my father had booked me a flight to go come back to the Bahamas for Father's Day. The school called him and told him, I am not leaving the school compound. I'm suspended. And he must now change the flight because I am not coming on the day that he booked my flight. That's the power that the school had under this during this time. And so, you know, one thing led to the other. They shouted at us. We had to cut our hair off, all bald-headed and stuff, you know, standing on parade every morning in the snow. You know, your ears are freezing like it's ready to fall off, and you have to stand on military parade, you know. But through it all, I'm not going to speak negative about that school, because those years that I spent at Robert Land Academy propelled me to where I am. The respect I have for authority now is because of the institution of Robert Land Academy.
How long were you there?
I was there 2.5 years,
almost 3 years. Yes. We did this military school.
And an all-boys school, one of the only black boys there, you know. The majority came from Canada and Europe and Asia. But, you know, we were the first behemoths to ever go to attend this school and all of this. And I succeeded, you know.
So I know you eventually left, mm-hmm. but your brother stayed.
Yeah, he stayed. He stayed.
Why do you think your brother stayed, and why did you leave?
Yes, I left because at that age, who could tell me what to do, you know?
Give me your age then.
I was probably 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
So that was at the very beginning, and my mother died when I was 11. Remember that now. Yeah. So I was either 12 or 13. So I was quite young. But, you know, when I went to the school, they would have separated my brother and I. We were not living in the same barracks anymore. I was in A Corps, which is the Alpha Company, and my brother was in B Corps, which is the Bravo Company. And from that separation started, at that time, more than ever, we needed each other. They separated us. I couldn't hug my brother because that would be considered hands-on. I only saw my brother once, and that was on a Wednesday. We had brother Wednesdays, and that's where all siblings would sit at one table in the mess hall, and we would eat together. The mess hall is what we call a cafeteria, but the military term is mess hall. And so we would eat in the mess hall on Wednesdays, and that's where me and my brother would be able to sit and talk about life. But other than that, I would see him marching, you know, because you have to march everywhere on the site, on the school compound. But we never were able to interact. And so it was difficult for me. And being in an all-boys school where you feel like you're the only one here who's like this and that, they don't really respect me. But I was my young, closed-minded self. Now looking back at it, I told my father, I wish I had stayed at Robert Land Academy. But looking at it now, Robert Land Academy led me to Windsor School in Albany. Windsor School in Albany led me to St. Leonard's School in Scotland, where I became the first black-haired boy, and I left with such an honor leaving the school because of the discipline that I received from Robert Land Academy.
I want to segue here and talk about your brother right now.
Mm-hmm.
What does he do? He finished military school, and then what did he do?
Yes, well, he left, actually. I left in December. He left, I think, in March of the next year. He didn't stay too long after I would have left. He said that he thought I abandoned him when I left, but I never abandoned him. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, I left him, and he went to another school where he would have graduated very successfully at, what is the school called now? Lakefield College School, mm-hmm. which is another school. It's not a college, but it's called College School. And it's where he graduated, one of the top students in the school. And then he went over to study hospitality management.
What are you in hospitality?
Yes. My brother is studying at La Roche in Cromontana, which is in Switzerland. And they also have a campus in Spain, in Marbella. And so he's studying hospitality management, the same program like me, and I'm just studying hospitality at Glion. But the funny thing is, La Roche and Glion are considered sister schools because we are all under one umbrella, which is Summit Education. So to be honest, if I wanted to go and see my brother, I could just write an email, write a letter as a transfer request, and they can transfer me from Glion to La Roche, and I would not have to do any extra classes because we follow the same program, we follow the same, you know, curriculum. Mm-hmm. And so it would be very easy for me to transfer. So we're studying the same thing. The only thing is, he would have graduated way before me, making him a few semesters ahead. So I think my brother's now in semester 5, and I'm just in semester 3. So he's going to graduate, and then a few semesters after, I will graduate with my bachelor's in business administration.
Okay. You are among, you and your brother are two of seven?
Seven. Oh, yeah.
Two children of out of seven children.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that means there's five more of you.
Yes.
Briefly, because I don't want to go in detail, mm-hmm, right, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, about what's happening with your five other siblings who are still in the Bahamas, right?
Yes. No. Yeah. Oh, yes. All of them are in the Bahamas except for one now. He's in he's in the United States. But I am happy to say that from the time that I would have been gone to now being here, and I'm not saying it's because of me, but I am saying I have seen improvement in all of my siblings. My sister has a nice job. My brother is not, one of my brothers is not working, but he is making money his own way. My other brother, who I'm very happy, he has a daughter and everything, and a soon fiance. Her name is Veronica, and she's so nice, and he has a family. Then I have my second oldest brother, who's in the United States, and then my oldest brother is in Eleuthrum, also with a job, because some of them, they didn't have jobs before. They were making ends meet, however they were making it, but now they're all working lawfully, and they're all making money, and I'm just proud of them. They're succeeding, from and they're going from strength to strength, and I'm proud of all of my siblings, and I've never been not proud, but I'm even prouder now of them to see how they're succeeding.
When you were adopted, was there any contention to say, you're abandoning us?
Yes.
There's seven of us. Yes. Where are you all two going?
Yes. Of course they felt that we, no, well, I don't think they necessarily looked at us that we were abandoning them. I do believe that they felt that my adopted father, because he was responsible for most of the, you know, of the positive things that happened in our life, taking us out of the, you know, the abusive life with my biological father, putting us into a nice home in Cave Heights, actually in Venetian West first, and then in Cave Heights where I now reside, and all of these things. It was just, I felt we grew up close. Of course, seven siblings. My mother was the, you know, breadwinner. She was the glue. And so when she died, we needed each other even more. So, of course, they didn't see it in the way that my adopted father see it and how I see it, as an opportunity to better myself, to better ourselves with education and to come back and help them. They were sad. They were not happy that we were leaving. But after so long, they came to grips with it. You know, they do. They have said before, like, you know, we do believe that you guys have a better life. But it's the truth. We do have a better life than them. Than my brother and I, we do have a better life. We, you know, when it comes down to financial restraints, we don't face that. But my some of my siblings, they do. Sometimes they call me and say, Jaya, I don't have this. Can you please help me? And I would be the one, even though I'm the youngest one, I would be the one supporting them financially, amongst other things. So, of course, you know, we might have a better life than them. But I could tell you one thing. On the record, when I succeed and I make my life and I become a wealthy guy, I don't even want to say I'm going to turn around, but I'm always going to remember, because I don't want to say that my family is behind me or I'm above them or higher than them. I'm going to always remember them, and I'm going to, they will rise with me when I start to rise as well. So, you know, I think they did feel we abandoned them, but I love all of my siblings and I thank them for everything they did.
So it'd been about circa 8 years you were adopted for, right? Yes. Around that, mm-hmm. around 8-ish years. Mm-hmm. 8 years of living abroad-ish, because mm-hmm. I know you were here for a while and mm-hmm. you've gone to the Canada and right. end up in Sweden, Switzerland and Scotland, right?
Right.
Are you and your siblings, the ones who remained, are you close? I know you were close when your mother was alive, mm-hmm. but are you close now?
To be honest, we are not close. And it's sad, and it's something that my mother would be rolling over in her grave, in a grave about, because she never believed in this kind of behavior. But as we all got older, and as we all think that we are independent and we are our own man and woman, you know, we sometimes fall by the wayside. But I would say I have tried my endeavor best, CA, to stay in communication with all of my siblings, from my oldest brother, Karsten, who's in Eleuthera, to the youngest one just before me, Kamandra. I try to reach them. Now, do they answer me all the time? No. Do I get to speak to them all the time? No. But do they know that if they need something or they need a listening ear, that I, Kara Jaya Schlagenhoff, will be there? Unapologetically, they know it, that I will always be there for them, no matter how bad I feel. Actually, just today I was speaking to a friend and I said, it hurts me so much that my brother, he hasn't called me for the last 2 weeks. I don't know how he is doing. We were seeing each other every day and now he stopped talking. I said, well, I guess he's probably making money, you know, but that was a joke. But I haven't spoken to some of my siblings in a very long time. But one morning, just recently on Sunday last week, I woke up crying. I had a dream about my mother and I called all of my siblings, from Karsten straight down to Kamandra. Karsten answered, Tino answered, Naya answered, my sister Star answered, Nomar answered, but the one in Switzerland didn't answer. Mm. So, but he's always been like that. He's an introvert. He's very quiet. He don't talk. He don't communicate. You have to literally like beat him to get out his feelings. He doesn't show anything. We call him like a rock. He don't show any emotion, but he is an emotional, young man. And so I understand that. I love all of them. And these little situations where we don't talk every day or whatever, although I would hope and wish we would talk every day, they're all grown. They have families. They have work. And so for me, I am not upset. But I would say we are not as close as we should be and as my mother would want us to be.
What about Mr. Forbes, Daddy?
Oh, Lord, I don't know.
You haven't heard from Mr. Forbes since?
No, I haven't heard from him
since. Is that a good thing?
For me, yes. For me, it's a good thing. Because all of the time we did have conversations, my father, my biological father, he only spoke about it's not his fault that my mother is dead and he didn't, and he wasn't beating my mother, he was beating the demons in my mother, etc., because he was very abusive. And so, you know, I would love to have a connection with him at one point, but what can I say? I don't know when it'll ever happen. So it is very much a good thing.
Okay. And you haven't heard from your father, which is a good thing. And the last time you, if I remember, he moved to Turks Island. That's the last time you hear about him?
Yes, that was the last time. Actually, I called him a few Father's Days after that. I called him on Father's Day. Something told me to call him and wish him Happy Father's Day. And I was in Scotland, and I called him to wish him Happy Father's Day. And I just mentioned to him, I asked him if he will ever remember putting a gun to my head to kill me. And he remembered this story and he told me, do you really think I was going to shoot you, my own son? And I said, with tears in my eyes on a video call, yes, I did. I believe he was going to kill me that day. But anyhow, God has him now. And so I leave him and the things that he did. It's not my job, because I would never be able to understand, because he doesn't communicate anything, equal. It's not an equal communication where he speak on both sides. He only speaks on his side. He don't listen to others. And so he is stuck in his beliefs. And I recognize that.
I want to talk briefly about religion or your spirituality. That's mm-hmm. the right word. Your spirituality, mm-hmm. right? Because you're a positive person. Mm-hmm. You always claim and cling mm-hmm. on to God, right? Mm-hmm. But you indicated something. That your father, Mr. Forbes, said he's trying to beat out the demons.
And my mother.
Or your mother. That she was possessed.
Yes.
So that's why he had to be physical
yes.
and harsh
yes.
and a monster towards mm-hmm. her. Knowing that narrative, mm-hmm. knowing that your belief in God, how do you blame God for?
No.
No.
On Christ, the solid rock, I stand. All other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. I don't blame God for anything. Have I questioned my Holy Father? I have. Why did you take my mother and not my biological father? My mother loved us. My biological father really never showed us no love. So why didn't you take him? Why did you take on her birthday? But I came to realize my mother had suffered a severe stroke which paralyzed her. And she was paralyzed on one side. So when she died on her birthday, after all of my siblings were crying, I remember asking all of my siblings when we found out on the day that she died, I said, guys, why are we crying? I said, we always prayed that my mother had the best birthday of her life and probably this is the best birthday. Because we might have been praying for my mother and our version of best birthday would be. That's why it's so important when you say you leave things in the hands of God, that means you just leave it, you let it be. And that's something I've come to develop. That's something I've come to understand, and that's something I've come to appreciate, and I actually practice in my day-to-day life. I am tempted to think that my mother was in suffering and in pain, and God's version of the best birthday of her life, this was our prayer, was to take her to heaven and to make her join the master's bouquet, gathering flowers for the master's bouquet. And so I think she's a beautiful rose shining up there. I don't blame God for anything. I thank him for everything. I don't blame him for anything. And I thank him for all the hell I was put through. But look at me. I went through that. That was my past. Look at where I am now. If I sit down and I complain and I cry about the past, the life I had and all of these things, I'm doing myself an injustice. I'm being completely ungrateful to God for his mighty hand on my life. I'm being completely ungrateful to my adopted father who's given me a life. Why am I going to sit down all of my life and contemplate about the past? I can use the past to inform my future, to ensure that I don't be like my biological father was to us and my mother. But I'm not going to sit down and blame Jesus and blame God for everything. CA, if you would allow me, I just really want to say to those women who's living with abusive men, you have the strength to leave them. Run away. Take your children and go. Sometimes I remember asking my mother once, why did you not leave my biological father? Oh, because you know, my grandmother, she used to say like, you know, divorce ain't good. But my grandmother never really believed in the marriage of my biological father and my mother. She never sanctioned it. She never approved it. But they went to Turks and Caicos, eloped in. They got married. They came back with wedding marriage certificate. But my grandmother had no knowledge of this. This is my mother now. And so, you know, I just want to really encourage those women who feel like if they're not with a man or if they're not with their children's father, they cannot make it. You are stronger than you think, braver than you can ever imagine. You have the power, you have the strength, and you have the courage to get up. Because when your children, you think your children are not understanding and seeing, I am speaking to some of my siblings about stories when I was in Pampas that I could still remember. Me. That they would have never communicated to me. Or they said, Jayu, you was there? Jayu, you were so small, you remember that? Of course. So when you think your children, oh, that's all, she's only 2, he's only 1 year old, they don't really know what's going on. That's not true. They know it. It traumatizes them. And when they get older, they will always recall. So, you know, you have the strength to leave. And also vice versa, those men who's being abused by their wives or by their spouses or, you know, their girlfriends or fiancés, you also have the strength to leave, which I will not tolerate or accept or even entertain, is when a man comes and say, oh, she caused me to hit her. Nobody can cause you to do anything. You are responsible for your own life. And as an individual, for example, Sia, you could say to me, you are a dog and you deserve to die. I could either say thank you, I could decide to cry, I could decide to fight you, I could decide to say, that's all right, I leave you in God's hands. You see, I have the responsibility. You took the responsibility, that's your right, to say what you had to say to me. It's up to me on how I'm going to respond. Nobody can cause me to do anything. And that's one of the things I don't really understand with my father. He said my mother caused him to put his hand. Nobody can ever cause you to do something. You have to make that decision yourself. Now, they are responsible for their own actions, but you as an individual, you are responsible for your own as well. And so run away if you're in an abusive relationship.
You desire to be a mentor,
yes.
an inspiration for young adults.
Yes.
Why?
Because
why?
Because it's something I wish I had. Can I have my phone, please? I would like to read something to you, Mr. Nuri. I just recently went to Temple Christian High School. I'm not going to talk about that place. Because something happened just yesterday
mm-hmm.
that I will speak to you off the record that I am deeply disappointed in that particular institution where I attended. But anyhow, I will share us a photo, a message I received a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking.
Look through your phone. Make sure you find
my account. Because this message, it touched me so much. This is from one of my villagers. I have a huge supportive village. Sandina Neely, Mrs. Shaquille Sands, Mrs. Shalimar Johnson, my father, Beat Martin Schlagenhoff, some of his friends and family. I have Latoya Roll. I have Miss Vanita Sanders Green. I have so many people in my village who support me. This is Anne Campbell
mm-hmm.
from Scotland, who came based on my recommendation to the Bahamas, and she loved it. She was here for 3 weeks with me. She just recently went back. She sent me this message yesterday on Thursday, and it touched me so much. She said, "Just saw your post. You have a God-given gift. You are an inspiration and mentor for young people, largely because you know the school of hard knocks. You lived it. I love your burden for the less fortunate in life and your conviction that they can change through self-belief. So proud of you, Jaya. I love you so much. Never give up on your mission. Young people out there need you, all capital letters. Be the person you needed when you were them." I want to focus on that last sentence. Be the person you needed when you were them. That answers your question. Why I want to be a voice for these young men and women. Because I was there. I went through challenges. I went through an abusive life. It was difficult. It was sad. But I made it out. And I want to say to all of those young individuals who might think that suicide is the option, who might think that the only thing they can do is be on the streets and commit crime and be a part of gang activity, it is not the answer. It will never be the answer. And let me tell these young men, especially these young men, something. Let me tell you how you can test who these people on the streets are. Because I know you might come from a home, a broken family home, single parent home, no money, no food. You think that the streets, that's your ride or die, is the people on the streets. But let a big situation happen where the police get involved. The first person they will report on is you. They will say you were responsible, you take the blame, and then you would recognize then that they really didn't have your back. So the streets is not the option. Gang activity is not the option. Criminal activity is not the option. It will never be the option. There are portals. Call me, 535-7552. If you need to speak to somebody, I will listen. I will try my best to support. But don't turn to criminal activity and gang activity.
Don't turn to the streets. We have a caller who wants to engage you, Karen Jaya. Put your earphones on. Put your earphones on, too, so you hear that. Producer, pass the caller through for me. Go ahead, caller. Caller, can you hear me? Caller, going once. Caller, going twice. Oh, it didn't go through? Go ahead again, caller. Can you hear me? Okay, that means, caller, you got a call back. Sorry that took so long. But you can always call back and engage Karen Jaya shrugging off. And see, I'm able to say your name so easily.
Yes, I see.
Yeah, yeah, practicing.
Yes.
You mentioned not suicide is not an option.
Yes.
Have you ever thought about...
Oh, yes. Yes, please. Yes.
At such a young age, you thought about just ending
it? I wanted to kill myself, especially when my mother died. There was no purpose for me. My mother died. That was the only person who loved me. Why am I going to sit in this country and live in turmoil in the orphanage, you know, miserable, living with my abusive biological father, and all these other things. No. Suicide, for me, at one point, was the option.
Quickly, what stopped you? Because I see, I call this calling back, and I want to engage them. But what stopped you before that, not taking that option?
Understanding that I had a purpose in this life. I went to church one day. The pastor was speaking to me. He wasn't speaking to me. He was speaking to the congregation, but I felt he was speaking to me, and I changed my life and said, I'll never commit suicide ever again. I'll take the call. Okay.
Now, are we able to patch the caller through now, producer? Caller, can you hear me?
Hi, Mr. Nuri. Called to say good morning to you and your guest, and your guest is right on point. He's good. Tell him keep up the good works and continue putting all his faith and trust in God, and he will see him through.
Thank you so much, ma'am. I don't know your name, but it is individuals like yourself that causes me to continue to do what I do. And especially I could hear, like, you're much older than I am. And so, you know, anytime I can get advice and wise counsel from older individuals with wisdom, you know, it's really an honor and a privilege. And so thank you very much your kind words.
Yes, God bless you and keep up.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Dan.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That's so nice.
Just got a text from Jacqueline Duncombe saying prayers continually and blessings continually, Jaya. We're going to take a short commercial break right now, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about your style, your appearance. Yes. You dress differently.
Oh, yes.
And I want to know why you dress differently.
Yeah,
it has charisma, right?
Okay,
it's always bright to see you, right?
Yes.
But we'll take this short commercial break now. This is Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Of course, we're talking to Karen Jaya Slogenhoff, and he's telling his story. He's about to go back home.
Yes, to Switzerland.
He's home now, to Switzerland, right? After spending, like, how long were you here? 6 months?
6 months. Almost six months.
As an intern here at SLS, hotel at the Bahama,
one of the best resorts.
Yes, and he was telling his story on how he got there, and we'll continue that when we come back. We'll be right back.
Presents Becoming, a transformative women's empowerment summit that will take place on September 24th at the National Training Agency located on Gladstone Road at 3 p.m. Phenomenal speakers include DeQuessa Dean, Simone Bow, Sherilee Pinder, Marissa Mason-Smith, and Dr. Nyambi Campbell-Dean. Not to mention a flaunted fashion show segment hosted by Miss Phyllis Garraway. Tickets are $50 and can be purchased at the Nassau Guardian or Essence Med Spa, number 15 Bradley Street, Palmdale. Part proceeds will be donated to the Jenny Dean Caring and Sharing Cancer Support Group.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. It seems like nobody's calling to try to pronounce this name to get the prize, so that's good. I got to keep the prize for myself.
No, give it to me.
We should see. If nobody calls to pronounce
it. I could pronounce it.
Yes, and then you'll get it, right? Before the break, I mentioned your style. Yes. And the reason why I mentioned your style, right, because you dress differently. You dress like a fine, refined gentleman of what I call the colonial days, right? And this is always you. This is not like you're putting on airs.
No.
Every time I see you,
yes,
you have a blazer on.
Yes.
You have a vest on.
Yes.
And I want to know, how did you come about saying, man, this is me.
Yes.
This is who I am.
Yes.
This is what I'm going to dress like.
Yes.
So I want to explain that story.
Yes.
When did you start dressing like this?
Well, I would say thanks, first of all, to my grandmother, my mother's mother, Josephine Russell. She always dressed me in these high-stop pants, McGunnan pants, but I went to church every Sunday with her. Bible study, prayer meeting, when the family would, when church members would come over to the church, to our home for eating and just to read the Bible and sing gospel songs, I would be dressed. I followed my grandmother. So the loving and appreciation of suits started there. But of course, we were not financially stable, so I couldn't wear the clothing that I wear now.
Mm.
But I would just say I've been reborn. But I always had style, I would say, from I was a little boy. But when I got adopted and I was able to buy finer pieces of clothing, man, listen, you have one life to live.
You just take advantage of it.
Take advantage. Mm-hmm. And anybody can tell you, from I was in the orphanage, I used to scramble in the closets looking for suits. I never went to church, not one day, without a suit. When people told me, you have to take that blazer off, just go to school and go to church just with a shirt on and go, I said, I'm not going to church. The only time now that I just wear a short sleeve shirt and a pants to go to church is at my Anglican church, St. Mary's the Virgin. And the reason for that is because I am an acolyte. So I serve on the altar. So I have on the cassock and the coda most of the time. So nobody sees my outfit underneath that particular, piece of clothing. But every day you will see me. If you see me on the street, if you see me at the gas station, if you see me walking the street, you will see I wear a blazer, because I believe your looks is of utmost importance. You know, and I've been teased and bullied, laughed at. Oh, he's gay. He takes care of himself so well. Haters are going to hate. And I'm going to tell you, I ain't going nowhere. The style isn't going anywhere. It's only going to be, you know, redeveloped and strengthened. It's going to become stronger. You think you've seen something yet? Wait until I come back to the Bahamas. Whenever I come back, you'll have me on the show. You'll be like, boy, you change all your suits, because I am going to have a complete wardrobe reshuffle, a new wardrobe I'm going to bring on. And so I just believe looks is so important. And if you hate it, if you don't like it, that's okay. I don't dress for you.
On a personal note, do you speak any foreign languages?
Yes. Well, I am learning now German. I spreche Deutsch. But mein Deutsch ist nicht gut.
No sprechen Deutsch?
No.
So I can say that.
Mein Deutsch ist nicht gut. No.
Okay. And living in Switzerland, how is that?
Oh, it's lovely. It's cold. I can't wait to go back now, because the sun in the Bahamas, it's a murderer. It's killing so many people. I think it's been the hottest summer, but let me tell you something. I am not complaining, because I know when I go back to Switzerland, we are going to have one of the coldest winters this winter. And it's already cold in Switzerland now, where you will have to wear a jacket and a scarf and everything else. But when I go back, I'm going to be complaining. And I'm going to be so sad that I missed the sun in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Why, Beat, when are you going to send me back to the Bahamas? When are you going to let me come back? I just want to eat some food. After this interview, I'm going to go shout out, I don't even know the name of this place called, but it's called the Queen's Kitchen. I'm going to eat from there today. It looks so good, this food on the menu. I'm going to have some real Bohemian food.
We have about 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about your adopted father, and you have an adopted sister too?
No, just an adopted father.
Yes. Okay, tell me about your adoptive father as a description.
Yes.
As who adopted you?
Yes. Mr. Beat Martin Schlagenhoff, a guy with a heart of an angel, I would go as far to say a heart like Christ himself. He went through a lot of challenges with us growing up, yet he remained unwavering in his love and his support and in his conviction that education is the only way out. He is a potential investor. He's been trying now to build his resort in Eleuthera, and the government is just giving him the runaround, which is absolutely sad. He has not given up on this quest to build his resort in Eleuthera. He is still going, and he still believes in the Bahamas. He supported under the former minister, Daniel Johnson. He was the number one financial contributor to so many events and opportunities, which also saw a few, you know, well-talented young men and women travel to New York at an expo and all of these things. So he's an investor. He's a financial contributor, financial supporter for so many who he sent them to education in high school, looking for nothing in return. So my adopted father is one of the greatest individuals I could speak on to date. Yes.
And I appreciate that. That has been Mr. Karindera.
Schlagenhof,
right? Yes. And he was telling his story. And thanks very much for coming to come back indeed. To continue and conclude indeed. Your story. Indeed. And like I said, if you want to listen to the first one, that's June 26th, that you can go back to Guardian Radio under Guardian Radio AM. But it's definitely a pleasure having you back, man.
Likewise.
And safe travels back to Switzerland.
Switzerland, indeed. Okay. Indeed. 14 hours long.
14 hours.
Yes.
Have a wonderful day. Guardian Radio AM.